The 33 sermons on Nibbana were delivered by the Venerable Bhikkhu Katukurunde Nyanananda in Sinhala at Mitrigala Nisaranavanaya Forest Hermitage. They were translated into English by the same Venerable Monk, presently residing at Potkulkala Forest Hermitage in Kandagedra Devalagam.
Namo tas bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhase Namo tas bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhase Namo tas bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhase Etang santang, etang panitang, yadidang sabba sankhara samatho Sabbu pati pati nisaggo, sanhakkhayo, virago, nirodho, nibbana. This is peaceful, this is excellent, namely, the stilling of all preparations, the relinquishment of all assets, the destruction of craving, detachment, cessation, extinction. With the permission of the most venerable great preceptor and the assembly of the venerable meditative monks, this is the 19th sermon in the series of sermons on Nibbana. Towards the end of our last sermon, we started commenting on the two terms Saupadishesa Nibbana Dhatu and Anupadishesa Nibbana Dhatu. Our discussion was based on a discourse which we quoted from the Itivuttaka. We also drew attention to a certain analogy found in the discourses, which shows that the two Nibbana elements actually represent two stages of the extinguishment implicit in the term Nibbana. When no more firewood is added to a blazing fire, flames would subside and the logs of wood already burning go on smoldering as embers. After some time, they too get extinguished and become ashes. With regard to the Arahant too, we have to think in terms of this analogy. It can be taken as an illustration of the two Nibbana elements. To the extent the living Arahant is free from fresh graspings, lust, hate and delusion do not flare up. But so long as he has to bear the burden of this organic combination, this physical frame, the Arahant has to experience certain afflictions and be receptive to likes and dislikes, pleasures and pain. In spite of all that, mentally he has access to the experience of extinguishment he has already won. It is in that sense that the Arahant is said to be in the Nibbana element with residual clinging in his everyday life while taking in the objects of the five senses. At the last moment of the Arahant's life, even this organic body that had been grasped as upadinna has to be abandoned. It is at that moment when he is going to detach his mind from the body that anupadishesa parinibbana dhatu comes in. A brief hint to this effect is given in one of the verses occurring in the Naga Sutta referred to earlier. The verse runs thus: Vita rago, vita doso, vita moho anasavo, sariram vijahang nago, parinibbissati anasavo. The one who has abandoned lust, hate and delusion and is influx free, that elephant of a man, on giving up his body, will attain full appeasement, being influx free. If we define in brief the two Nibbana elements this way, a more difficult problem confronts us relating to the sense in which they are called Dittadhammika and Samparayika. Dittadhammika means what pertains to this life and Samparayika refers to what comes after death. What is the idea in designating Saupadishesa Nibbana Dhatu as Dittadhammika and Anupadishesa Nibbana Dhatu as Samparayika? In the context of karma, the meaning of these two terms is easily understood. But when it comes to Nibbana, such an application of the terms would imply two types of Nibbanic bliss, one to be experienced here
and the other hereafter. But that kind of explanation would not accord with the spirit of this Dhamma, because the Buddha always emphasizes the fact that Nibbana is something to be realized here and now in toto. It is not a piecemeal realization, leaving something for the hereafter. Such terms like Ditteva Dhamme in this very life, Sandittika here and now, and Akalika timeless emphasize this aspect of Nibbana. In the context of Nibbana, these two terms have to be understood as representing two aspects of a perfect realization attainable in this very life. Briefly stated, Anupadisesa Nibbana Dhatu is that which confers the certitude, well in time, that the appeasement experienced by an arahant during this lifetime remains unchanged even at death. To say that there is a possibility of realizing or ascertaining one state after death might even seem contradictory. How can one realize one's after-death state? We get a clear-cut answer to that question in the following passage in the Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta of the Majjhima Nikaya. Sayatha vibhikkhu telancha paticca vattincha paticca telappadipo jhayati tasseva telasacha vattiyacha pariyadana anyasacha anupahara anaharo nibbayati evameva kho bhikkhu kaya pariyantikam vedanam vediyamano jivita pariyantikam vedanam vediyamano jivita pariyantikam vedanam vediyamiti pajanati kayasa bheda uddham jivita pariyadana idheva sabba vedaitani anabhinantitani siti bhavissanti iti pajanati. Just as monk, an oil lamp burns depending on oil and the wick, and when that oil and the wick are used up, if it does not get any more of these, it is extinguished from lack of fuel. Even so, when he feels a feeling limited to the body, he understands, I feel a feeling limited to the body. When he feels a feeling limited to the life, he understands, I feel a feeling limited to life. He understands, on the breaking up of this body, before life becomes extinct, even here itself, all that is felt, not being delighted in, will become cool. The last sentence is particularly noteworthy in that it refers to an understanding well beforehand that all feelings not being delighted in will become cool at death. The futuristic ending signifies an assurance here and now, as the word idheva, even here itself, clearly brings out. The delighting will not be there because all craving for a fresh existence is extirpated. The arahant has won this assurance already in his arhata phala samadhi, in which he experiences the cooling off of all feelings. That is why we find the arahants giving expression to their nibbanic bliss in the words siti bhutos minibhuto, grown cool am I, yeah, extinguished. Since for the arahant this cooling off of feelings is a matter of experience in this very life, this realization is referred to as Anupada Parinibbana in the discourses. Here we seem to have fallen into another track. We opened our discussion with an explanation of what Anupadisesa Parinibbana is. Now we are on Anupada Parinibbana. How are we to distinguish between these two? Anupadisesa Parinibbana comes at the last moment of the arahant's life, when this organic combination of elements, grasped par excellence, upadhinna, is discarded for good. But Anupada Parinibbana refers to the arahata phala samadhi as such, for which even other terms like Anupada Vimokha are also applied on occasion. As the term Anupada Parinibbana signifies, the arahant experiences even in this very life that complete extinguishment, Parinibbana, in his arahata phala samadhi. This fact is clearly brought out in the dialogue between Venerable Sariputta and Venerable Punna Mantaniputta in the Rathavinita Sutta of the Majjhima Nikaya. Venerable Sariputta's exhaustive interrogation ending with Kimattham charahiyauso bhagavati brahmacharyam bhussati, for the sake of what then, friend, is the holy life lived under the exalted one? gives the following conclusive answer from Venerable Punnamantani Putta. Anupada paninibbanatthanko avso bhagavati brahmacharyangusati. Friend, it is for the sake of perfect nibbana without grasping that the holy life is lived under the exalted one. As the goal of endeavor, anupada parinibbana surely does not mean the ending of life. What it implies is the realization of nibbana. It is that experience of the cooling off of feelings the arahant goes through in the arahatapala samadhi. It is sometimes also called nirupadhi, the assetless. Here we have a problem of a semantic type. At a later date, even the term nirupadhisesa seems to have come into vogue, which is probably a coinage forged after the term anupadhisesa. Nowhere in the discourses one comes across the term nirupadhisesa varinibbana. Only such terms as nirupadhi, nirupadhi, nirupadhi dhamma are met with. They all refer to that arahatapala samadhi. As for instance, in the following verse, which we had occasion to quote earlier too. Kayena amatang dhatun pusayitva nirupadhin upadhipatinissaggang satchikatva nasavo deseti samma sambuddho asokam virajam padam. Having touched with the body, the deathless element, which is assetless, and realized the relinquishment of assets, being influx-free, the perfectly enlightened one proclaims the sorrowless, taintless state. To proclaim, one has to be alive. Therefore, nirupadhi is used in the discourses, definitely for the arahatapala samadhi, which is a living experience for the arahant. Anupada parinibbana, anupada vimokha and nirupadhi all refer to that experience of the cooling off of feelings. This fact is clearly revealed by the following two verses in the Vedana Sanyutta of Sanyutta Nikaya. Samahito sampajano sato buddhasa savako vedanacha pajanati vedananancha sambhavam yatha cheta niruddhanti maggancha khayadaminam vedananam khaya bhikkhu nicchato parinibbhi. In this couplet, the experience of the fruit of arahanthood is presented under the heading of feeling. The disciple of the Buddha, concentrated, fully aware and mindful, understands feelings, the origin of feelings, and the point at which they surcease, and the way leading to their extinction. With the extinction of feelings, that monk is hungerless and perfectly extinguished. The reference here is to that bliss of Nibbana which is devoid of feeling, avedaita sukha. It is hungerless because it is free from craving. The perfect extinguishment mentioned here is not to be understood as the death of the arahant. In the discourses, the term parinibbuta is used as such, even with reference to the living arahant. Only in the commentaries we find a distinction made in this respect. The parinibbana of the living arahant is called kilesa parinibbana, the perfect extinguishment of defilements, while what comes at the last moment of an arahant's life is called khanda parinibbana, the perfect extinguishment of the groups or aggregates. Such a qualification, however, is not found in the discourses. The reason for this distinction was probably the semantic development the term parinibbana had undergone in course of time. The fact that this perfect extinguishment is essentially psychological seems to have been ignored with the passage of time. That is why today, on hearing the word parinibbana, one is immediately reminded of the last moment of the life of the Buddha or of an arahant. In the discourses, however, parinibbana is clearly an experience of the living arahant in his arahatapala samadhi. This fact is clearly borne out by a statement in the Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta already quoted. Tasya idheva sabba vedaitani siti bhavissanti iti pajanati. He understands that all what is felt will cool off here itself. It is this very understanding that is essential. It gives the certitude that one can defeat Mara at the moment of death through the experience of the cooling off of feelings. The phrase jivita pariyantikam vedanam refers to the feeling which comes at the termination of one's life. For the arahant, the arahatapala samadhi stands in good stead, particularly at the moment of death. That is why it is called akuppa cheto vimutti, the unshakable deliverance of the mind. all other deliverances of the mind get shaken before the pain of death, but not this unshakable deliverance of the mind, which is the realization of extinguishment that is available to the Arahant already in the Arahat Phala Samadhi, in the experience of the cooling off of feelings. It is this unshakable deliverance of the mind that the Buddha and the Arahants resort to at the end of their lives when Mara comes to grab and seize. So now we can hark back to that verse which comes as the grand finale in the long discourse from Itibuttaka we have already quoted. Ye etadanyaya padang asankhatam vimutta citta bhavaneti sankhaya te dhammasaradhigama khaye rata pahansute sabba bhavani tadino. This verse might appear problematic as it occurs at the end of a passage dealing with the two Nibbana elements. Ye etadanyaya padang asankhatam, those who having fully comprehended this unprepared state, vimutta citta bhavaniti sankhaya, are released in mind by the cutting off of tentacles to becoming, te dhamma saradhigama khaye rata, taking delight in the extirpation of feelings due to their attainment to the essence of dhamma, that is the unshakable deliverance of the mind, pahansute sabba bhavani tadino. Being steadfastly such like, they have given up all forms of becoming. The last line is an allusion to the experience of the cessation of existence here and now, which in effect is the realization of Nibbana, true to the definition bhavanirodho Nibbana. Cessation of existence is Nibbana. It is that very cessation of existence that is called asankhata dhatu, the unprepared element. If bhava or existence is to be called sankhata, the prepared, the cessation of existence has to be designated as asankhata, the unprepared. Here lies the difference between the two. So we have here two aspects of the same unprepared element designated as saupadisesa parinibbana dhatu and anupadisesa parinibbana dhatu. The mind is free even at the stage of saupadisesa to the extent that the smoldering embers do not seek fresh fuel. Anupadisesa refers to the final experience of extinguishment. There, the relevance of the term parinibbana lies in the fact that at the moment of death, the Arahants direct their minds to this unshakable deliverance of the mind. This is the island they resort to when Mara comes to grab. The best illustration for all this is the way the Buddha faced death when the time came for it. Venerable Anuruddha delineates it beautifully in the following two verses. Nahu assasa passaso thita citta satadino anejo santi marabha yankala makari muni asallinena cittena vedanam ajjavasai pajjotasseva nibbanam vimokkho chetaso ahu. Adverting to whatever peace the ageless sage reached the end of his lifespan, there were no in-breaths and out-breaths for that steadfastly such-like one of firm mind. With the mind fully alert, he bore up the pain. The deliverance of the mind was like the extinguishment of a torch. The allusion here is to the deliverance of the mind. This is a description of how the Buddha attained parinibbana. Though there is a great depth in these two verses, the commentarial exegesis seems to have gone at a tangent at this point. Commenting on the last two lines of the first verse, the commentary observes, Buddha Muni santing gamissamiti santing arabha kala makari. The Buddha, the sage, passed away for the sake of that peace with the idea, I will go to that state of peace. There is some discrepancy in this explanation. Commentators themselves usually give quite a different sense to the word arabha than the one implicit in this explanation. Here it means for the sake of. It is for the sake of that peace that the Buddha is said to have passed away. In such commentaries as Jatakattakatha and Dhammapadattakatha, commentators do not use the word Arabha in the introductory episodes in this sense. There it only means in connection with, indicating the origin of the story as suggested by the etymological background of the word itself. When, for instance, it is said that the Buddha preached a particular sermon in connection with Devadatta Thera, it does not necessarily mean that it was meant for him. He may not have been there at all. It may be that he was already dead by that time. The term Arabha in such a context only means that it was in connection with him. It can refer to a person or an incident as the point of origin of a particular sermon. Granted this, we have to explain the verse in question not as an allusion to the fact that the Buddha, the sage, passed away for the sake of that peace with the idea, I will attain to that state of peace. It only means that the Buddha, the sage, passed away having brought his mind into that state of peace. In other words, according to the commentary, the passing away comes first and the peace later. But according to the sutta proper, peace comes first and the passing away later. There is a crucial point involved in this commentarial divergence. It has the presumption that the Buddha passed away in order to enter into that Nibbana element. This presumption is evident quite often in the commentaries. When hard put to it, the commentaries sometimes concede the sutta standpoint, but more often than otherwise, they follow a line of interpretation that comes dangerously close to an eternalist point of view regarding Nibbana. Here too, the commentarial exegesis based on the term Arabha runs the same risk. On the other hand, as we have pointed out, the reference here is to the fact that the Buddha adverted his mind to that peace well before the onset of death. Thereby, Mara's attempt is foiled because feelings are already cooled off. It is here that the unshakable deliverance of the mind proves its worth. As a realization, it is already available to the Buddha and the Arahants in their Arahata Phala Samadhi. And when the time comes, they put forward this experience to beat off Mara. That is why we find a string of epithets for Nibbana such as Tanang, Lenang, Deepang, Saranang, Parayanang, Kemang and Amata. When faced with death or the pain of death, it gives protection, Tanang. It provides shelter like a cave, Lenang. It is the island, Deepang, within easy reach. It is the refuge, Saranang, and the resort, Parayana. It is the security, Kemang, and above all, the deathless, Amata. This deathlessness they experience in this very world. And when death does come, this realization stands them in good stead. Why Venerable Anuruddha brought in the profane concept of death with the expression Kalam Akari into this verse describing the Buddha's Parinibbana is also a question that should arrest our attention. This particular expression is generally used in connection with the death of ordinary people. Why did he use this expression in such a hallowed context? It is only to distinguish and demarcate the deliverance of the mind couched in the phrase Vimokkho Chetaso Ahu from the phenomenon of death itself. The Buddhas and Arahants also abandon this body like other beings. The expression Kalang Akari, made an end of time, is an allusion to this phenomenon. In fact, it is only the Buddhas and Arahants who truly make an end of time, being fully aware of it. Therefore, the most important revelation made in the last two lines of the first verse, Anejo Santi Marabha Yang Kala Makari Muni, is the fact that the Buddha passed away having brought his mind to the peace of Nibbana. All this goes to prove that an Arahant, even here and now, in this very life, has realized his after-death state, which is none other than the birthless cessation of all forms of existence that amounts to deathlessness itself. In all other religions, immortality is something attainable after death. If one brings down the Buddha's Dhamma also to that level, by smuggling in the idea of an everlasting Nibbana, it too will suffer the same fate that would contradict the teachings on impermanence, anicca, and insubstantiality, anattata. But here we have an entirely different concept. It is a case of overcoming the critical situation of death by directing one's mind to a concentration that nullifies the power of mara. So it becomes clear that the two terms saupadisesa parinibbana dhatu and anupadisesa parinibbana dhatu stand for two aspects of the same asankhata dhatu, or the unprepared element. As a matter of fact, arahants have already realized well in time their after-death state. That is to say, not only have they gone through the experience of extinguishment here and now, but they are also assured of the fact that this extinguishment is irreversible even after death, since all forms of existence come to cease. This is an innovation, the importance of which can hardly be overestimated. Here the Buddha has transcended even the dichotomy between the two terms sandhittika and samparayika. Generally, the world is inclined to believe that one can be assured only of things pertaining to this life. In fact, the word sandhittika literally means that one can be sure only of things visible here and now. Since one cannot be sure of what comes after death, worldlings are in the habit of investing faith in a particular teacher or in a god. To give a clearer picture of the principle involved in this statement, let us bring up a simple episode concerning Siha the general, included among the fives of Anguttara Nikaya. It happens to center on Dana Katha, or talks on liberality. Let it be a soft interlude after all these abstruse discourses. Siha the general is a wealthy benefactor endowed with deep faith in the Buddha. One day he approaches the Buddha and asks the question, Sakka nukho bhante sandhittikan dana phalam panyapetun. Is it possible, Lord, to point out an advantage or fruit of giving visible here and now? What prompted the question may have been the usual tendency to associate the benefits of giving with the hereafter. Now the Buddha, in his answer to the question, gave four advantages visible here and now and one advantage to come hereafter. The four fruits of giving visible here and now are stated as follows. 1. Dayako siha danapati bahuno janasya piyo hoti manapo. Siha, a benevolent donor, is dear and acceptable to many people. 2. Dayakam danapatim santo sapurisa bhajanti. Good men of integrity resort to that benevolent donor. 3. Dayakasa danapatino kalyano kiti saddo abhuggatiti. A good report of fame goes in favor of that benevolent donor. 4. Dayako danapati yanyadeva parisang upasankamati yadi khattiya parisang yadi brahmana parisang yadi gahapati parisang yadi samana parisang visaradova upasankamati amanku bhuto. Whatever assembly that benevolent donor approaches, be it an assembly of kings, of brahmins, of householders, of recluses, he approaches with self-confidence, not crestfallen. These four fruits or advantages are reckoned as sandhittika because one can experience them here and now. In addition to these, the Buddha mentions a fifth, probably by way of encouragement, though it is outside the scope of the question. Dayako siha danapati kaya subheda param marana sugatim sargam logam upapajyati. The benevolent donor siha, when his body breaks up after death, is reborn in a happy heavenly world. This is the fruit of giving that pertains to the next world. Samparayikam dana phalam. Then see here the general makes a comment which is directly relevant to our discussion. Yani mani bhanti bhagavata chattari sandhittikani dana phalani akhatani naham ettha bhagavato saddhaya gacchami aham petani janami yam chakhomang bhanti bhagava eva maha dayako siya danapati kayasa bheda parammarana sugatin saggan lokan upajyatiti etaham ne janami ettha chapanaham bhagavato saddhaya gacchami. Those four fruits of giving visible here and now, which the Lord has preached, as for them, I do not believe out of faith in the Exalted One, because I myself know them to be so. But that about which the Exalted One said, see here, a benevolent donor, when his body breaks up, after death is reborn in a happy heavenly world, this I do not know. As to that, however, I believe out of faith in the Exalted One. Regarding the first four advantages of giving, Sihya says, I do not believe out of faith in the Exalted One because I myself know them to be so. Naham ettha bhagavato saddhaya gacchami aham petani janami. It is because he knows out of his own experience that they are facts that he does not believe out of faith in the Exalted One. There is something deep worth reflecting upon in this statement. Then with regard to the fruit of giving mentioned last, that is to say, the one that concerns the hereafter, samparayika, Sihya confesses that he does not know it as a fact, but that he believes it out of faith in the Exalted One. Etaham na janami ethachapana bhagavato saddhaya gacchami. It is because he does not know that he believes out of faith in the Exalted One. Here then, we have a good illustration of the first principle we have outlined earlier. Where there is knowledge born of personal experience, there is no need of faith. Faith is displaced by knowledge of realization. It is where one has no such experiential knowledge that faith comes in. That is why Sihya confesses that he has faith in the fifth fruit of giving. With regard to the first four, faith is something redundant for him. Now that we have clarified for ourselves this first principle, there is a certain interesting riddle verse in the Dhammapada to which we may apply it effectively, not out of a flair for riddles, but because it is relevant to our topic. Asaddho akatanyo cha sandhichedo cha yo naro hatavakaso vantaso save uttama poriso. This is a verse attributed to the Buddha that comes in the Arahanta Vagga of the Dhammapada. It punts upon some words. Such riddle verses follow the pattern of a figure of speech called double intent, which makes use of ambiguous words. The above verse sounds blasphemous at the first hearing. The Buddha is said to have employed this device to arrest the listener's attention. The surface meaning seems to go against the Dhamma, but it provokes deeper reflection. For instance, Asaddho means faithless. To be agatanyu is to be ungrateful. Sandhichedo is a term for a housebreaker. Hatavakaso is a hopeless case with no opportunities. Vantaso means greedy of vomit. So the surface meaning amounts to this, that faithless, ungrateful man who is a housebreaker, who is hopeless and greedy of vomit, he indeed is the man supreme. For the deeper meaning, the words have to be construed differently. Asaddho implies that level of penetration into truth at which faith becomes redundant. Akata, the unmade, is an epithet for Nibbana, and Akatanyu is one who knows the unmade. Sandhichedo means one who has cut off the connecting links to samsara. Hatavakaso refers to that elimination of opportunities for rebirth. Vantaso is a term for one who has vomited out desires. The true meaning of the verse, therefore, can be summed up as follows. That man who has outgrown faith, as he is a knower of the unmade, who has sundered all shackles to existence and destroyed all possibilities of rebirth, who has spooled out all desires, He indeed is the man supreme. The description then turns out to be that of an arahant. Asaddho as an epithet for the arahant follows the same norm as the epithet asekho. Sekha, meaning learner, is a term applied to those who are training for the attainment of arahanthood from the stream winner, sotapanna, upwards. Literally, asekha could be rendered as unlearned or untrained, but it is certainly not in that sense that an arahant is called asekha. He is called asekha in the sense that he is no longer in need of that training. That is to say, he is an adept. Asaddho too has to be construed similarly. As we have mentioned before, the arahant has already realized the cessation of existence in his arahatthapala samadhi, thereby securing the knowledge of the unmade, akata, or the unprepared, asankhata. The term akatanyu highlights that fact of realization. The most extraordinary and marvelous thing about the realization of Nibbana is that it gives an assurance not only of matters pertaining to this life, sandhittika, but also of what happens after death, samparayika. In other words, the realization of the cessation of existence. Nibbana as the realization here and now of the cessation of existence, bhavanirodho Nibbana, carries with it the assurance that there is no more existence after death. So there is only one asankhata dhatu. The verse we already quoted to ends with the words, Pahansu te sabba bhavani tadino. Those steadfastly such like ones have given up all forms of existence. One thing should be clear now. Though there are two Nibbana elements called Saupadhisesa Nibbana dhatu and Anupadhisesa Nibbana dhatu, there is no justification whatsoever for taking Anupadhisesa Nibbana dhatu as a place of eternal rest for the arahants after death, an everlasting immortal state. The deathlessness of Nibbana is to be experienced in this world itself. That is why an arahant is said to feast on ambrosial deathlessness, amatam paribhunjati, when he is in arahatthapala samadhi. When it is time for death, he brings his mind to this samadhi, and it is while he is partaking of ambrosial deathlessness that Mara quietly takes away his body. An arahant might even cremate his own body as if it is another's. Now we are at an extremely deep point in this Dhamma. We have to say something in particular about the two terms Sankhata and Asankhata. In our last sermon, we happened to give a rather unusual explanation of such pairwise terms like the Hidesho and the Fadesho, as well as the mundane and the supramundane. The two terms in each pair are generally believed to be far apart, and the gap between them is conceived in terms of time and space. But we compare this gap to that between the lotus leaf and the drop of water on it, availing ourselves of a simile offered by the Buddha himself. The distance between the lotus leaf and the drop of water on it is the same as that obtains between the hither shore and the farther shore, between the mundane and the supramundane. This is no idle sophistry, but a challenge to deeper reflection. The Dhammapada verse we quoted earlier, beginning with Yassa parang aparang va, para parang navijyati, to whom there is neither a farther shore nor a hither shore nor both, is puzzling enough. But what it says is that the arahant has transcended both the hither shore and the farther shore. It is as if he has gone beyond this shore and the other shore as well. That is to say, he has transcended the dichotomy. We have to say something similar with regard to the two terms Sankhata and Asankhata. Sankhata, or the prepared, is like a floral design. This prepared floral design, which is bhava, or existence, is made up, as it were, with the help of the glue of craving, the tangles of views, and the knots of conceits. If one removes the glue, disentangles the tangles, and unties the knots, the sankhata or the prepared itself becomes asankhata, the unprepared. Then and there, the same floral design which was the sankhata has now become asankhata. This itself is the cessation of existence, bhavanirodha. When one can persuade oneself to think of Nibbana as an extinguishment, the term parinibbana can well be understood as perfect extinguishment. The Parinibbana of the Arahant Dabbabanlaputta is recorded in the Udana as a special occasion at which the Buddha uttered the pæan of joy. Venerable Dabbamallaputta was an Arahant gifted with marvelous psychic powers, specializing in miracles performed by mastering the fire element, Tejo Dhatu. His Parinibbana too was a marvel in itself. When he found himself at the end of his lifespan, he approached the Buddha and informed him of it as if begging permission with the words, Parinibbana kalo me dani sugata. It is time to, for me to attain Parinibbana, or well gone one. And the Buddha too gave permission with the words, Yasadani tvang dabba kalang manyasi. Dabba, you may do that for which the time is fit. As soon as the Buddha uttered these words, Venerable Dabba Mallaputta rose from his seat, worshipped the Buddha, circumambulated him, went up into the sky, and sitting cross-legged, aroused the concentration of the fire element, and rising from it, attained Parinibbana. As his body thus miraculously self-cremated, burnt in the sky, it left no ashes or soot. This was something significant that fits in with the definition of Nibbana so far given. That is probably why the Buddha is said to have uttered a special verse of uplift or pæan of joy at this extinguishment, which was perfect in every sense. Abhedi kayo nirodhi sanya vedana siti rahan susabba upasaming susankhara vinyanam atth magama. Body broke up, perceptions ceased, all feelings cooled off, preparations calmed down, consciousness came to an end. This event was of such a great importance that though it occurred at Velvanarama in Rajagaha, the Buddha related the event to the congregation of monks when he returned to Savatthi. It was not an incidental mention in reply to a particular question, but a special peroration recounting the event and commemorating it with the following two Udana verses, which so aptly constitute the grand finale to our Udana text. Ayoghana hatasseva jalato jata vedaso anupubbhopasantasya yathana nyayate gati evaṁ sammā vimuttānaṁ kāma-bandhogatārinaṁ panyāpetuṁ gati natthi pattānaṁ achanaṁ sukhaṁ. Just as in the case of a fire blazing like a block of iron in point of compactness, when it gradually calms down, no path it goes by can be traced, even so of those who are well released, who have crossed over the floods of shackles of sensuality and reached bliss unshaken, there is no path to be pointed out. We have deviated from the commentarial interpretation in our rendering of the first two lines of the verse. The commentary gives two alternative meanings, probably because it is in doubt as to the correct one. Firstly, it brings in the idea of a bronze vessel that is being beaten at the forge with an iron hammer, giving the option that the gradual subsidence mentioned in the verse may apply either to the flames or the reverberations of sound arising out of it. Secondly, as a some say so viv, kechit bada, it gives an alternative meaning connected with the ball of iron beaten at a forge. In our rendering, however, we had to follow a completely different line of interpretation, taking the expression ayoghana hatassa as a comparison. Ayoghana hatassa iva, for the blazing fire, jalato jata vedaso. On seeing a fire that is ablaze, one gets a notion of compactness as on seeing a red hot block of solid iron. In the Dhammapada verse beginning with Sayo Ayogulo Bhutto Tatto Agi Sikhupamo, better to swallow a red hot iron ball that resembles a flame of fire, a cognate simile is employed somewhat differently. There the ball of iron is compared to a flame of fire. Here the flame of fire is compared to a block of iron. All in all, it is highly significant that the Buddha uttered three verses of uplift in connection with the Parinibbana of the Arahant Venerable Dabbamallaputta. The most important point that emerges from this discussion is that Nibbana is essentially an extinction or extinguishment. an extinguished fire goes nowhere. In the case of other arahants, who are cremated after their parinibbana, there is a leftover as ashes for one to perpetuate at least the memory of their existence. But here, Venerable Dabbamallaputta, as if to drive a point home, through his psychic powers based on the fire element, so to it that neither ashes nor soot will mar his perfect extinguishment in the eyes of the world. That is why the Buddha celebrated it with these special utterances of joy. So then, the cessation of existence is itself Nibbana. There is no everlasting immortal Nibbana awaiting the arahants at their parinibbana. That kind of argument the commentaries sometimes put forward is now and then advanced by modern day writers and preachers too in their explanations. When it comes to Nibbana, they resort to two pet parables of recent origin, the parable of the tortoise and the parable of the frog. In the former, a tortoise goes down into the water, and the fishes ask him where he came from. The tortoise replies that he came from land. In order to determine what sort of a thing land is, fishes go on asking the tortoise a number of questions based on various qualities of water. To each question, the tortoise has to reply in the negative, since land has none of the qualities of water. The parable of the frog is much the same. When it gets into water, it has to say no, no to every question put by the toad, still unfamiliar with land. To make the parables convincing, those negative answers, the no-nos, are compared to the strings of negative terms that are found in the sutta passages dealing with the arahata phala samadhi, which we have already quoted. For instance, to prove their point, those writers and preachers would resort to the famous Udana passage beginning with Athibhikave tadayatanam yathaneva pathavina apunna tejona vayo, etc. There is amongst that sphere in which there is neither earth, nor water, nor fire, nor air, etc. But we have reasonably pointed out that those passages do not in any way refer to a nondescript realm into which the arahants enter after their demise, a realm that the tortoise and the frog cannot describe. Such facile explanations contradict the deeper teachings on the cessation of existence and dependent arising and not self. They create a lot of misconceptions regarding Nibbana as the ultimate aim. The purpose of all those arguments is to assert that Nibbana is definitely not an annihilation. The ideal of an everlasting Nibbana is held out in order to obviate nihilistic notions. But the Buddha himself has declared that when he is preaching about the cessation of existence, those who held on to eternalist views wrongly accuse him for being an annihilationist who teaches about the annihilation, the destruction, and non-existence of a truly existing being. Sato sattasa uccedam vinasam vibhavam panyapeti. On such occasions, the Buddha did not in any way incline towards eternalism in order to defend himself. He did not put forward the idea of an everlasting Nibbana to counter the accusation. Instead, he drew attention to the three signata and the four noble truths and solved the whole problem. He maintained that the charge is groundless and utterly misconceived, and concluded with the memorable declaration, Ubbechahang etarahiche dukkhancheva panyapemi dukkhasvacha nirodha. Formerly as well as now, I point out only a suffering and a cessation of that suffering. Even the term Tathagata, according to him, is not to be conceived as a self. It is only a mass of suffering that has come down through samsara due to ignorance. The so-called existence, bhava, is an outcome of grasping, upadana. When grasping ceases, existence comes to an end. That itself is the cessation of existence, bhava-nirodha, which is nibbana. As the term anupada parinibbana suggests, there is no grasping in the experience of the cessation of existence. It is only when one is grasping something that he can be identified with it or reckoned by it. When one lets go of everything, he goes beyond reckoning. Of course, even the commentaries sometimes use the expression apanyatti bhavam gata, gone to the state beyond designation with regard to the parinibbana of arahants. Nevertheless, they tacitly grant a destination which in their opinion defies definition. Such weak arguments are riddled with contradictions. They obfuscate the deeper issues of the Dhamma relating to Paticca-samuppada and Anatta and seek to perpetuate personality view by slanting towards eternalism. It is to highlight some extremely subtle aspects of the problem of Nibbana that we brought out all these arguments today.
Dear listeners, it is our sincere wish to make these sermons accessible free of charge to all who like to listen to them, because the gift of the Dhamma excels all other gifts. We therefore encourage you to copy these sermons and share them with others, but kindly note that they should not be reproduced for sale. May the blessings of the Triple Gem be with you.